Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me, I've waited long enough.
As I gaze upon the beautiful abyss of outer space, I can't help but reminisce on how we held onto our faith. Gold is how we stayed till the day that time would say that Toonami's back, bitches. Pardon my francais. Now every week the absolution blasts off while the masses watch as an old familiar mascot by the name of Tom takes a seat and kicks the broadcast off, making major moves like a triple cut backdrop. I still remember watching Nebion doing damage and thinking, damn, is Goku ever gonna reach Namek? Obviously, I got a lot of love for the classics. The speed at which I used to run home to watch was the fastest. Absolution moving, flying through the galaxy. Toonami's back, the slap in the face to those who doubted it. Remain Toonami faithful till the day that I am gray and old. And like a Super Saiyan's glow, I will always stay gold.
This is Nerdcore Absolution. Come to peace with your inner nerd, and after you can stay gold like T.O.M. Chilling out the galaxy.
Watching closely from a perch among the stars, as viewers await the moment when the spirit bomb can charge. Hito Yui self-detonate.
Hey there, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative right here on the Absolution Network. This is episode 135 of The Prerogative, and we are back, baby. Yes, the Golden Archer from space above in the Absolution is back. Your captain, your guide to the Toonami stars of animation, Thomas Primetime Mattis. I'm back. How are you all doing? It's good to be back. Especially since I had such high hopes. I had high hopes back in March. But I am back. I'm looking forward to getting more than just maybe two episodes out before going on their unexplained absence. You know, those black holes, they really do a number on you. But joking aside, it's good to be back. Good to finally get this done. It's summertime, if you can't already tell by the fan in the background, which I need to have going. For anybody who might complain, I apologize, but I need to go in because, one, I need to stay cool. I'm a big guy, and to keep the equipment cool and everything. So, I apologize if that gets a bit distracting. I have it on its lowest setting possible. But we are back, and rather than go into a long explanation to why I didn't have an episode on Lilo and Stitch out, which I did plan, and I was this close. I actually was recording it, and stuff didn't sound right. I'm a perfectionist, and, well, things fell through, and then schoolwork got in the way, and, well, here we are. Gonna save Lilo and Stitch and Moana for next year. I will review them at some point. Maybe I'll get out of my comfort zone and not review them Disney Month. And I say that because, well, quite frankly, this is going to hopefully be some type of brand new start. As I'm shaking things up here at The Prerogative, this episode you're going to be hearing me do a brand new way of reviewing stuff. You know, one of the things I look back as I, again, got caught up in tons of different things was, how am I doing my reviews? And it's one of those things to where you're going, and after about a half hour of talking about stuff, you get tired and you get bored and everything. And then, mind you, that's on me, and it kind of doesn't become, I don't want to say it doesn't become fun, because I guess it also depends on what the series is. And I felt like I was forcing myself into, quite frankly, the box that I had placed myself in. Because, again, I had been doing my style of podcasting, which I do pretty much every show, where you know, I have categories. I do music first, then I do animation, then I do acting, voice acting. Mind you, animation can be animation or special effects if it's a live-action movie or whatever. And then acting, whether it be voice acting or not. And then that goes into story. And I actually had that set up into, like, well, music. And music really works well with animation. They flow into each other. And then that flows in, when you take the break, you come back, you talk about acting because that flows into story. And you want story last because that's the most important part. But I kind of realized that I became trapped inside that cycle of doing things that way. And I think that was really affecting the way I was looking forward to doing podcasts because I became very rigid in my style. Which somewhere, Donovan Morgan Grant is going, "I told you so!" Well, to which my reply is, you can't be rigid when that's the way you start out. It becomes rigid after 8 years of doing things. That's my only retort to him for that. By the way, Donovan Morgan Grant knows exactly what I'm talking about when I make that joke. Hi, Don. So, with this episode, I'm going to be trying a brand new way of reviewing things. I don't have things set in music and all these different categories. I have things I like and things I didn't like. Hopefully that will maybe make it a bit more of a quicker review, in a way. I don't know. It depends on how much stuff I have to talk about. But, you know, again, it's looking to freshen things up and make things a bit more fun and interesting and engaging for you, the listener, to listen to. And, of course, make any way you can make things easier for a podcaster. It is much, I think, needed for any podcaster. I don't think you can be rigid all the time. Brand new episode of Tom's Friday, because we're, for the first time in 135 episodes, really shaking things up in the way we are reviewing things. With that, today's show, again, like I said, I had plans for Disney, and I actually had plans for the beginning of April, because the beginning of April is the beginning of baseball season. One of my favorite sports. And, you know, by the way, since it is baseball season officially, let me just hit this little button right here. Official baseball season song, because I am a child of the late 80s, early 90s, in a way, and yeah, Major League, one of my favorite sports movies. But I've always been a baseball fan, and actually one of my favorite topics in anime, in particular sports anime, and in particular baseball anime. And you know, you have that, and then you have something else that's been, you know, as you know, I kind of, you know, run around the edges of talking about, and that's sort of gender politics, because, you know, today's geek culture can't seem to get rid of that. So, I've been wanting to review the series today, and it's today's topic, mind you, for a long, long time, because I always talk about how to do sort of gender bias and gender politics in a way, in a series, in the right way. I said, this isn't the right way, this isn't the right way. Maybe I should show you an example of how to do things the right way, which I very much think is today's topic. And so we are combining my love with baseball with my want and need to constantly put my foot in my mouth and talk about gender politics with Princess Nine. Which is a shoujo baseball anime, which follows a Japanese girls' baseball team as they try to break gender barriers in high school baseball. This is a series I've seen before, but at the same time, I know I liked, and I had things I didn't like. So it was very interesting to go back and see this. Princess Nine debuted in 1998. And 26 episode series. And currently the rights are owned, or at least the distribution rights, are owned by Right Stuff under their Lucky Penny label. You can actually watch the entire series, both sub and dub, on YouTube right now. Just go to Naizomi Entertainment and look under their Lucky Penny label, and you should be able to find Princess Nine. I will try to include links in the show notes for you, so you can go watch it for yourself and make your own judgment. But this is a series I know, when I first saw it years ago, I really enjoyed it. It was good to go back and see this. And by years ago, I mean I first saw the entire thing in 2008. But technically, that's almost been 10 years. So it's been a while since I watched it again. One of the very interesting things about this series is that the series is quasi-based on a real-life sort of scandal that happened in Japan. Because it follows the main character, Ryo Hayakawa, and her father who has passed away by the time this series starts, Hidehiko Hayakawa, is supposedly based on the real-life baseball player Masaki Ikenagawa of the I need to bring my, F in Japanese on this. Nishitetsu Lions. Basically, he was a, Ikenagawa was a stellar rising ace pitcher for them, who had won at Koshin and entered pros after finishing high school, and, like, had a stellar EPA and everything. But then the Black Mist scandal of the 1970s, which actually covered multiple sports in Japan, but he was found guilty as part of that and was banned from professional baseball. Though there was really no evidence to support that he had been a part of it, and many fans believed he was innocent. And it wasn't until 2005 that his sentence was revoked and his name was fully rehabilitated. Which is very interesting. It happened in 2005. It happened about 7 years after this anime came out. And I wonder if maybe this anime had something to do with it in that way. That'd be interesting to find out. But basically, the Black Mist scandal was that baseball players were taking money and they were, maybe they were a pitcher and they were giving some easy balls so people could hit home runs, or they were throwing games, or it was a really big scandal in Japan, and it covered a lot of players, and Ikenagawa was probably the biggest name at part of that, since he was like this really big star at the time, was pretty much an unstoppable pitcher, and he got banned from life. And so it's very interesting, like, this takes something that happened in Japan, a sort of story that people were still sour about. And they do play with it in this series, I think, to great effect. And we'll talk more about that when we get into the reveal, but it's like, to me, that's just a very interesting thing when you get a series that takes a real-life event and integrates it as part of its plot and part of its story. And I really suggest you going online and looking up sort of the history of the Black Mist scandal, because it's a really, I think, interesting look into sort of how the Japanese feel about the sports athletes. I mean, it's not all that different than the way we act, like when we find out a player's do on steroids or whatever, but it's like sort of the idea of the purity of sports and people care about, and to the point to where just the optics of seeming involved can, you know, hurt you. And like how long it takes for people to forgive people. Like, that is something we do see today in sports, to where, you know, baseball players who have been caught doing steroids, people still don't forget. I mean, Barry Bonds, I mean, yeah, he took steroids, more than likely. And I say that because he was never officially found, and I know people like, come on. But the point I want to make is, regardless of whether he did steroids or not, the hardest thing to do in sports is to hit a little ball coming at like 100 miles per hour. No amount of steroids helps you hit the ball better. It just makes you hit it further. Okay? That's still an incredible hard thing to do, is to hit a little ball. Mind you, the other thing and that we will talk about with this series that I think it does very well is, again, the integration of, I call it gender politics because I have really nothing, no better way to describe it. But, you know, the breaking of barriers, gender bias, breaking through the barriers of not gender bias, but gender roles. And this, like I said, is a series that I think does it very well, as compared to what I say doesn't do it well in today's time. And I think a lesson can be taken from this series in regards to how it tackles gender roles and gender bias and gender politics. And again, that also goes back to why I was also talking about the Hayakawa being based on a real player story. All that gets integrated into this story. So with that, when we get into it, and so let's go down our cast list. This is, by the way, the cast list for the dub. Ryo Hayakawa is voiced by Hilary Hagg. Izumi Himuro by Monica Rial. Hikari Yoshimoto by Cynthia Martinez. You know, hey, Sora Nagano's in here, yay! Yuki Azuma by Margel Bache. And I hope I'm pronouncing that name right, because it seems French and Belgian or something like that. You know, it takes me a long time just to get Japanese names. There's also a Greek name in here I'm going to screw up. I'm just letting people know about this ahead of time. I have been practicing, by the way, but in like 2-3 people down, when I get to it, all bets are off at time of recording. Sierra Morty Mora is voiced by Kelly Cousins. Koharu Hota is voiced by Kira Vincent Davis. Kanako Mita, voiced by Anita Propagatas. Propatine Gaius. Like I said, I made no promises. And I apologize for completely butchering your name. And I don't laugh, like, I think that's okay. I tried. I put the old college effort into that one. Mao Daidoji is voiced by Shelley Colleen Black. Yoko Tokashiki is voiced by Tiffany Grant. Nine Mori is voiced by Jennifer K. Earlhart. Shinsaku Kido is voiced by Andy McCavin. Keiko Himuro is voiced by Kelly Madison. And last but not least, the Leonardo DiCaprio heartthrob of the series. And I say that for a particular reason. Hiroki Takatsuki is voiced by Vic Mignogna. Our story of Princess Nine starts with Ryo Hayakawa, who is a young girl who has just graduated middle school and has an absolute killer arm. She's the secret weapon of her local baseball team. But suddenly over the summer, she's invited to Kitsuragi School for Girls by their president, Keiko Humori, who plans to start a girls' high school baseball team and enter them into the legendary Koshien baseball tournament in an effort to break gender barriers in Japan. But unbeknownst to Hayakawa, the team was really created by the president for her, as she is the daughter of a legendary disgraced pitcher, Hidehiko Hayakawa, whose pitches were unhittable. Now Hayakawa must lead this makeshift team of courageous girls to the top of Koshien. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into Princess Nine. This is a brand new format for doing this show. So we're going to start off with the things that I like. I'd really know whether I should do like things I liked and do a thing I didn't like. But then again, in this case particular, I have a lot more things that I like than things I didn't like. So I'm just going to start with things I like, and then we'll do things I didn't like, and then the show from there. Not that I like ending on negative notes, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. Again, I'll be really exploring and experimenting with this format in episodes to come. So, starting right out, the very first thing I like is, and I made mention it before we did the review, because I want to talk a little bit about gender roles and gender bias and gender politics and... Because, like I said, it's a topic I can't stay away from. And more often put my foot in the mouth syndrome when it comes to it. But at the same time, it is a very topical and very big subject that comes up today. I guess in particular what bothers me whenever sort of it gets talked about is there's this idea that there's never been any, shows that cover women and that they haven't targeted women and talked about gender bias and gender roles. And, you know, it's that, you know, oh, we're praising Frozen because it's the first time a woman's sat on her own and tried to do what a man can do. Point to all internet memes pointing to Mulan. You know that type of feel to where it's like, did you not watch Mulan and Beauty and the Beast and all these other Disney movies? I actually kind of had a very interesting view on this because I took a recent gender, and I know we're supposed to get into review, but I apologize for this quick diatribe. But we're doing research on Disney movies for a final project for a gender and language class, and we were trying to explore how language has evolved over the past 80 years in regards to how Disney princesses use them. Or for that matter, female characters to male characters. And it was just very interesting the way people did research. It's like, it's hard to see anything in, like, how particular female and male characters use, like, hitches and things like that. I mean, the main point of the class was really to sit there and say that we have these sort of socially constructed ideas about how women and men speak that a lot of times aren't really true. You know, like, for instance, the idea that men use more curse language than women, which is not true, because I think we all know a girl or two, an aunt or whatever, that like cusses like a sailor. So it we have much respect for those people, despite society telling us that we shouldn't. So I mean, and that's what the class was. And I guess in particular interest, it was like, there was this one study that basically came down on Disney films because they were saying that in the 90s, for all their praise of being progressive for women and female characters, that the men spoke more than the women. But the counter argument to that was that there were a lot more male characters in the movie than there were female. You know, for instance, Little Mermaid. There's Ariel, and then there's Ursula. And then there's all the other male characters. You look at it came down on Mulan. Yeah, Mulan's like the only female character who has any significant sort of lines in that movie. Everybody else is male. You have one female and like 15 other males. I think the males are going to have more lines on a mathematical equation than Mulan. But sit there and say that, well, that just shows it's not that progressive. It's like, that's not really how it works. Like, there is a disconnect here that we're missing. Like, Mulan, yeah, she may not have as many lines as all the 15 other males combined, but she has more significant lines, and her dialogue moves the story. And I know, I'm getting off into diatribe. And the reason I, though, am getting into this is, you know, and I always knock, because, you know, whether it be modern-day comics or animation or whatever, that tries to sit there and have this idea of progressism, while at the same time, their idea of progressivism is to literally pound you over the head with a sledgehammer of, like, look how progressive, look at these women, look at what they're doing, and they're breaking ideas, and we're doing twists on stories. Progressive, progressive, progressive. And it's like, they're banging you over the head with the sledgehammer till there's nothing left. And I always say, I don't like things being done like this. You know? And I always say, there's a better way to do it. Well, this series, and this is my very first like, and what the whole entire diatribe was trying to get to, was that this series really does the idea of talking about gender politics and gender roles better than anything I've seen done in really the past 5 years. And I say that because there's no doubt, the main plot of this story is that you have these all-girl baseball team that is formed by this all-girl school to break the gender barrier. But, you know, as I said in the synopsis, it's really been made because for Rio Hayakawa, because she is the heir, as it is, to this legendary pitcher, and it's his only daughter here, his only child. She has received his gift and can pitch just like him. And, you know, and really that's the belief, which is that she is just as talented as her father, and she deserves a stage to showcase her talent. So we're going to, you know, do this very controversial thing of trying to break barriers and develop this team, but the team is really developed so that she can have a stage to shine. Because, unfortunately, You know, because baseball isn't seen as a girl's sport, she won't be given a stage to shine. And so, the ideas of gender roles and gender politics are very much woven into the series plot, but at the same time, it's never bang you over the head with it. I mean, there are just entire episodes which are just talking about this subject, but it never feels like overload. Like, it's, or more importantly, it's never, you should like these characters because they're women trying to break the gender role barrier. It's more of, you know, we want to give these women a platform to perform and a stage for them to shine, and society is pushing back because society has been taught that that's not a stage for them to shine on, but we want to prove otherwise. And it's just, it's never banged over the head. It's very subtly, maybe subtly is not the word, but in the way it's performed, it's never this, you should like these characters because they are women. It's, you should like these characters because they're good people. And like, just more importantly, because the plot is also interwoven with different plots. Because like I said, you have that breaking the gender barrier plot that is interwoven with Hayakawa's plot of self-discovery of, you know, her father. Because there, you know, again, you have the president who was like the original lover and girlfriend of Hayakawa, who he had to leave because of the scandal. And sort of there's this connection that the president has with Hayakawa and, you know, her mother, and just because of this love for this man who they really care about. Again, this is also sort of the intercombining of different genres. It's a shoujo anime. It's also a baseball sports anime. And so I think it also interweaves these different genres really, really well. And, you know, because you have all these really different plot lines, you have this, there's a, as with any shoujo, there's a romance angle going on. There's, you know, there's a reason I jokingly called Vic Mignogna's character the Leonardo DiCaprio heartthrob character, because that's basically what he is. He's this superstar, genius baseball player who everybody is looking up to, like, just like genius level, can hit any pitch, whatever. And, you know, he sees Rio pitching for the first time and, like, falls in love with her. And there's this romance angle with him falling in love with her. She not really understanding her feelings because, you know, she's only just graduating middle school and she's really never thought about love, you know. Again, which is, again, part of it. This all goes to something which is going to be the next point I'm going to talk about. But you have that, and then, you know, again, Imori, Izumi's character, who has grown up with Takatsuki, and that's classic sort of shoujo romantic triangle. And so you have that plot, you have the president's plot of wanting to see justice for Hayakawa, that's for his legacy, for his child, to give her a stage to shine. You have it also being a sort of a discussion in a way about gender roles and about the breaking them, and you cheering for them to break barrier. And again, what makes all these plots work, because you have all these little different plots, and so it never feels like any one plot overtakes the other, but what makes all of them work is really the second point that I really, really love, and that is the character building that happens throughout this entire series. They do so much to build characters, to make you fall in love with the characters. And in this case, what they're doing is they're doing sort of classic shonen sports anime tropes, in a way. You know, again, it's, you know, the team coming together. Them, you know, this series has been jokingly called a league of its own meets Major League in a way, because it's the, you know, very early on, first couple episodes. But we don't have enough for a team. We have, you know, she has been invited by the president. She accepts. She comes to find there's only two players that have been given scholarships at this point. Left fielder Yuki and the first baseman, Hikari, who's a switch hitter. And so they have to recruit the coach, who's always drunk. Again, a lot of this is very... And I love how self-conscious this series is, because one of my favorite characters is Nitamori, who is the sort of, becomes the team's sort of, club manager. She's always in, like, a cheerleading outfit. I don't know why. I do know why, because she's a very, in a way, she's a comedic character, but she's also the heart and soul of the team, in that, like, she's always reading manga. It's like, she can do anything. And it's like, oh, I've discovered, because she's a rich girl, and so she's really never had to do anything, but she wants to learn how to do everything. So, like, your first introduction to her is her doing laundry, but she puts, again, it's the classic trope of her putting too much soap in. It's like, it's such a trope, but it works so well here, because it is a genuine comic moment, because she does learn how to do it. It's not like she does it over and over again. They do it once, and it works, and then they move on. But she's displayed as a very dependent person. It's always there cheering on the team, even willing to, you know, basically she's their backup. If somebody gets hurt, she's there to get into a jersey and try her best. to the full, like, she's there for the majority of that first game and continuously say, I want you to go up there and just count to 10. It's like, but I didn't swing the bat. It's like, I know. I didn't need the bat. But again, sort of that classic recruitment tribe of series of episodes, you know, where they get I'm looking at the cashier, where they get Sierra and Koharu and Kanako and Mao. And again, that sort of building, like, we are introducing you to these characters. And the thing is, throughout the series, every character has their own individual plot and individual story that plays out throughout the entire series. And again, that just introduces you. You come to care about these characters. You come to, I don't want to say fall in love with them, but in a way you do. You fall in love with them like you fall in love with family, or you fall in love with your favorite sports player, and you connect with that sports player, and you, like, you want to see that player succeed, because, you know, you see them go through so much. You know, there are people, for instance, there are Cowboy fans who recently are really, really heartbroken that Tony Romo had to retire, and for a lot of them, they wanted to see Tony Romo, win a Super Bowl, not just because they were Dallas fans, but because he was this undrafted agent, free agent. Nobody expected him, and he turned out to be this really good quarterback, at least in their eyes, who was trying really hard, and they wanted to see him succeed. Wrestling does this a lot, to where they introduce you to a character, you fall in love with this character, and part of the story is their journey, and you hope that journey ends with them winning the world championship, because you want to see them reach the top of the mountain, and you feel like you're going on that journey with them. It's no different here. With each one of these girls, you feel like you are going on a journey as part of their story, and each one has an individual story. I mean, one of the more heartbreaking ones is Yuki's story, to where, you know, she was this sort of softball prodigy, and basically, she was so good, it made the others look bad, so they turned on her, and almost drove her to suicide. If not for, basically, this imaginary character that she created, or, like, it's implied, but not implied, and apparently it's very real, because somehow we bring aliens into this. I don't know why. it's never exactly explained. It's unidentified to exactly whether her little... I'm blanking on the name of the doll. I apologize. Was real or not, or imaginary, or whatever. Heartbreaking story there. And, you know, and you feel for this character, and it just... You want to see the character succeed and overcome. And you do get to see them overcome. You get to see them succeed as they beat team after team and prove that, you know, a girl's team can be just as good, if not better, than any other male baseball team. And, you know, that's something else. Again, a lot of the scenes, the sort of sports and the games themselves are presented as very exciting in classic sort of sports anime form. So really, that becomes the backbone of this series that makes all those individual plots in this series work very well, is the character building and you coming to care for these characters. Even somebody like Yoko, who, you know, it's very obvious she has no idea what she's doing. She's only here because she saw the team make a newspaper and she feels that she can get fame. Yet, at the same time, when they need her, she's always there. And by the end, she starts to care so much that she does honestly want to play and starts becoming good. It's like, when she puts her mind to something, she can do it. And the other part of character building is, then you have also the team dynamic and how the characters interact with each other. And, sort of the great sort of natural comedy that comes with interactions, you know, Yoki and Sarah, the way they interact is just like classic comedy there. And then that sort of brings up a good point. I love the entire cast here. Everybody is on point, and puts an absolutely outstanding performance. If I had to give an MVP, which is hard to do because everybody, Hilary Hagg, really great as Hayakawa, just really nailed the role and put a lot of power into that role. Put a lot of just the charisma that she brought into this character. Like, if that character doesn't shine through, the story can be a bit lost, because, again, everything focuses on her character. So if her character isn't done well and doesn't have, and really what, like I said, it needed that charisma to shine through, again, I think a lot of the story can fall through. It requires Hayakawa to be played with a lot of charisma, and Hilary had brought that charisma to the character. Just really outstanding. The character really stood out as being the lead throughout all the story. Monica Rao did a great job as Zumi, as the rival. All of them, you know, Cynthia Martinez. I mean, I feel bad because Hikari wasn't really given a lot to do, and sort of like, she had the least amount of story, because there really wasn't anything interesting about her other than she was a switch hitter. Like, she was this outstanding softball player. Nobody picked on her. She just wanted to play baseball because it's a new child. Once I joined. It's like, she didn't have the problems Yuki had, or Sarah, who, you know, was trying to run from, you know, the fact that her mother apparently didn't want to have her, and feels like she's become a baron on them, like, preventing them from basic. They never say what. The implication is that they want to go out and do couple stuff, and they can't because they have a child, and so her mother regrets that. And has never wanted to have a child, even though their child is a star athlete. And it's like, holy crap. It's like, really? You're parent of the year, aren't you? So she becomes a sort of thug, in a way, who can beat up people just using billiard balls. Kaharu being a fisherman who feels like she has to take over for her father, who has become ill, even though, you know, her father like wants her to go out and explore the world. You have Kaneko, who is the principal's daughter, who really loves baseball, but her father wants her to focus on becoming a doctor. And so the first part is her having to hide her identity. Mao, who always focuses a bit too much on helping the team rather than herself and needs confidence in herself. Yoko, as I mentioned, being the ditzy, you know, she's just there because of fame but has to learn to love the team. You know, as I said before, all these are all these character stories. But Hikaru really doesn't have any of that. Nope, she's just a girl. Da, 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 da. I'm gonna stop singing. Yet she doesn't fall out of it. And more importantly, Hikaru, in a way, becomes sort of the calm of the group. She's the most level-headed in almost any situation. And so she's sort of that neutral voice that works very, very well. So you have that, and like everybody, like I said, they all had stories, and each one of the voice casts hit that story very well and brought the right tone and depth and just nailed each character perfectly. Margu Balich. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. It's Baulck. But her as Yuki, in particular, in those two episodes where Yuki becomes front and center, and you learn about how she became suicidal and after being picked on by the team and basically being kicked off her team because basically she was making everybody look bad because she was too good, which is horrible, and just you feel for her character. Jennifer K. Eckhart as Nina Mori, again, just brought some great comedy to the role. I really enjoyed it. Just the enthusiasm that she brought to the character. It's like everything is like happy-go-lucky, and it's like, you don't get out much, do you? But it's funny, and it's this genuine, hearty funny, and this very genuine niceness of the character that she really brings out that's really, really well done. Annie McKiven as the coach. Probably the underdog performance of the group because I think he does a really good job with that. Same can be said for Kelly Madison as Keiko Himuro. Again, she brings a lot of heart, and in particular in the scenes where she's finally tells a story about, you know, her romance with Hayakawa's father and everything that happened, and just really brought passion to that role. Like, you really believe that she really cared. It wasn't just that. Her reason for doing this may have been to give Hayakawa a stage and shine, but yet she also really cared about all of the girls succeeding and breaking down this wall that had been placed in front of them. So that was just very genuine. So the entire voice cast did a wonderful job, from that to the supporting roles. All of them really well done. Next thing that I really liked was the animation. And you're considering this is from 1998. It's aged, I think, very well. It's got a bit of a sketch, but sort of that right type of sketch, that sketch soul look. It's classic shoujo style and everything, and it got that classic shoujo feel, and just feels really lovely, and it's just lovely to look at, and it draws you into the characters, it draws you into the action. In particular, I think that's really what shines through, is the sort of sports action sequences are really, really well done in the animation. They have a lot of energy to them. They're very obviously very energetic, but just, you know, again, very kinetic in that energy. And you feel like a lot of thing is moving, and you feel a lot of movement, and you feel the energy. And it just gets you into the games. And again, you combine that with all the girls' individual stories. When you get to actual games that you're seeing them in, you find yourself just cheering for the girls and wanting to see them succeed and wanting them to beat these boys. So the animation, really well done. And last but not least, the music. I thought the music was absolutely tremendous for the series. You know, probably the weakest part of it was the ending theme, that I didn't like as much, but, you know, it is what it is. It's almost a cliche type of ending theme, but, you know, considering what we get for the rest of the anime, I think that makes it seem a little bit cliche on its own, because it's just, it can't compare. I mean, the music, instrumental music and the sort of in-anime music, the score itself, outstanding. Sort of more of a Western style of, you know, using music to tell emotions as opposed to really using a lot of silence. There are a lot of use of music here. And again, like I said, for those who've listened for a long time, or for those who did it the first time, again, you know, the idea is that, you know, Eastern style, what Japanese and Eastern cultures usually use in their media, they tend to use a lot more silence and more of the natural sound. And there's elements of that, but it's much more of a Western idea to use music to tell emotion. And there's a lot more of that, in particular during the individual game scenes, where music can get tense and loud and everything. And so just the overall score, really well done. But to me, the MVP music-wise is that opening theme. Like, it is just outstanding. It's got everything I want in an opening theme. I mean, you have the use of guitar, synthetic keyboard, you got an orchestral background, and it's just, and it's got this electric charge to the song that just makes you like, yeah, it's time to watch the Princess Nine again, it's time to watch him kick some boy's ass, you know, and it's just, it gets you up and energetic for the show. And it's like you find yourself even singing along. Da 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 da. And that's the other thing is, in particular, as an opening, because mind you, the full opening, which, you know, I've listened to, it's just a really a grand song. But how it's used in the opening to where it gets to the part where it's sort of that introduction showing each girl and what they maybe do best and everything. It's that introduction to the team, the introduction to Hayakawa. And then it has that grand extension towards the end of it. It's like, oh man, you know you're going to watch something epic. So, that is it for the things I like. So, a lot of things that I liked. Let's get into the things I didn't like. And to start off with, this is going to seem so whack that this is really the main thing I didn't like about the series, but the ending, just that last episode. Oh man, this is so hard to explain because I have gone back and forth. Isn't this what they want me to feel? Is it really okay for me to hate this because this may be what they want or what they, because again, for those who don't know, and again, spoiler alert for those who have not seen the series, probably should put that spoiler tag at the beginning. I always forget, but I think it's assumed at this point, being that it's a full review. But, you know, the final episode is, well, really you have to talk about the final couple of episodes. So, there's one of the plots that goes through is the sort of the rivalry between Hayakawa and Himuro. She's in love with Takatsuki, because they've grown up together, but Takatsuki has fallen in love with Hayakawa, to the point he calls her tofu, which she hates, but the tofu because, what she makes at her family's sort of little restaurant. They make a sort of brand of ramen soup, and she does it with tofu, so he calls her tofu, and so this that love triangle, that is one of the main plots in a way. Well, not the main, but it's a B plot that's under the sort of the couple of A plots that are running throughout the entire series. So that comes to a head in those last three episodes, because the third to last episode is called The Kiss, and it's right before the big game where they're going to face Kitsuragi Boys School in like the semifinals, with the winner going to the finals. It's good because on the training trip before Koshien, Takatsuki somehow made it out. It's very confusing. Basically, he thought something, I can't remember what, ended up coming. Oh, that's what it was. Himuro called him and sounded depressed, so he came out to see her, to cheer her up, and she, like, took, and he had, I'm really gonna have to explain this. He had Hayakawa's gift. Hayakawa had made him a handkerchief earlier in the series, and she had stolen it, and like, oh, look what he gave me. He really loves me, and then they get caught in the rain. Hayakawa and Takatsuki get caught in the rain. When they meet, while she's looking for Yuki's doll, which gets lost, and that's what brings out the revelation that she tried to commit suicide. This is going to be a long explanation, folks, but I have to go through each other. And I guess that maybe is also something that is part of this, is like, look at how much I have to explain. But that's because the entire story, everything is so interwoven with each other. She only runs into him because she's looking for Yuki's doll, which happens because somebody possibly stole it. It's never said. Again, the ending to that series of episodes is very unexplained. The less said of it, the better. But so she meets him, and they have a fight. Because she believes he's in love with her, and that she's just toying with her emotions, but she can't understand that she's really in love, and then she sees them kiss the day before, and it's like, because she's never really admitted her feelings, and that she does care for him, and blah, 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 blah. And then in the second to last episode, she just out of it. So he's pitching horribly. And the boys go up 5-0. And gets to the last inning and they need the breakthrough. So into the last episode. Because the second last episode ends, I think, with Yoko getting on base. And so Sarah lays down a bunt. She gets on base. Hikari, I believe it's Hikari, which is it's Hikari, who then does switch hitting, which is her trump card. She gets a hit and gets on base, and then Koharu, who gets a note about wind for her father, who has fallen sick again, but like basically said, like, I'm okay, just remember the wind. And listen to the wind and the waves, and it sounds like a Disney song, and it should be. What's that? Hits this massive grid, Sam. Everybody's cheering. But basically, what it leads to is, then Himori apologizes after they come back and tie it up, and she has to go out and pitch again, but her arm is like just jello. But Himori apologizes, like, it was my fault. I tried to get him on, but he doesn't. He loves you. Then, as she almost walks him, he confesses. Because why? It's like, this is baseball! There's no confessing in baseball! That's my best Tom Hanks impression, by the way. But he confesses, and like, even like, oh wow, Takazuki is confessing his undying love to him. Hayakawa, this is interesting. I'm like, you can go to hell, sir. You can go to hell, and you can love it there. to which she confesses back, and it's like, and then she pitches 3 straight lightning bolts with him somehow hitting the last one for a homer, and winning the game for the boys team. Now, I've gone onto that diatribe for a reason. I understand it's a shoujo anime. I understand it's a sports anime. And one of the common things is, you know, in particular, if it's the first season or whatever, for the team gets all the way to the end but loses. But it was the journey to get there. I understand all that. I mean, I'm a fan of Big Windup. End of Ace of Diamond, and our Diamond and Ace. I can't remember which one it's called. I understand all that. The point is, this entire story, the way it's been built up, the way all the plots built upon each other, made you care about these girls. And you wanted to see them beat the boys. Even more particular, because of the way, or maybe it's, again, because I'm male, and whatever, I don't know. All I know is, I really wanted to see Hayakawa strike Takasuki out. Like, I just feel like it ultimately hurts, because you present Takasuki as this, like, almost, you know, I kept making the joke. He's Leonardo DiCaprio from Titanic. He can do no wrong. He's a complete asshole in the entire movie, but he can do no wrong. And it's like, why? Why? And the only satisfaction, by the way, of Titanic is the fact that he dies. I'm just saying what every guy believes. Like, trust me, every guy who's ever had to sit through Titanic, the most satisfying part is having to watch his body drown. You hate the awful music that goes with it, but it's like, at least he died. yeah. But you want to see, it's like, why? Why is this in my... Like, can we get to baseball? Can we get to these girls kicking ass and taking names, please? Do we have to go with this... But by the end becomes this very forced plot line that makes Princess Nine, in a way, a victim of its own genre. Or at least of the genre half of this anime that is shoujo. Like, it feels like that storyline, or at least the way they took that storyline, was just like, well, this is what always happens in a genre, and we're just in a way, going by the numbers of that, and it feels forced, and it's just like, this is a particular case where you don't have to have them win. You can say, have it end in this episode and say, well, they made it to the finals only to lose by one run, but the Hayakawa girls baseball team proved to everybody that they deserve to be with them. Like, them beating their brother, and by brother I mean their brother school's team, because again, they're sibling schools. One is for all boys, one is for all girls. And to be more particular, for them to overcome this supposed genius hitter, I think would have worked so much better for the ending of this series. But it's like, it's almost that, you know, in a series where it is about breaking gender roles and breaking gender barriers, it's like, beating him was that last barrier, and yet they made it like, well, the male's always going to win. And I think that hurts the series in the long run. I mean, like, this also sort of goes to the other thing I didn't like. And that's that there's not more of this series. I really love this series. And the thing about that ending is, the only other thing I can think of is that, like, maybe they did this ending because they planned to do a second season. And really, the last part of the series, which is, you know, after the credits roll in the last episode, there's, like, they go to, like, the clubhouse and, like, the Kitsuragi boys has won Koshien, but I think everybody agrees that their hardest game wasn't in the finals, but rather against their own sister school, who took them to the max. I think I speak for everyone when I say we look forward to the girls' coaching school coming back next year. And it just, that made it sound like there were plans for a second season. Now, again, I couldn't find any notes on ratings or anything, so I couldn't tell you whether they had bad ratings or whatever. But for whatever reason, a second season wasn't done. And it's really obvious that this story was done with the maybe idea that there would be a second season. And maybe that's where they would have beaten them, which would make sense. But as it stands now, this is a standalone 26-episode series. It doesn't have a second season. And so the ending doesn't feel right. It leaves a bad taste in your mouth. Considering what the plotline and the storyline is about, yes, you have them overcome people's ideas of gender roles and everything, but they still lose to the guy. And it's not just any guy, it's the so-called perfect guy. And maybe, you know, look, again, I am also a guy. So maybe this is just from my perspective, and maybe as a guy, I have this different perspective, where girls don't see him as the perfect guy, and this ending does make sense and understandable to them. But I really wanted to see Hayakawa strike his ass out. Like, hell, I'll be honest, I didn't want to see her strike him out. I want to see him beam him up the... I want to see her beam him in the head like that one pitcher the other day almost did Bryce Harper. Okay? And that, by the way, that would have been perfect. Beams him, he gets mad, he charges the mound. It's a baseball... Maybe this is a guy. Maybe this is a guy thing. I don't know. I really don't want Blaine Gore, but I want Blaine Gore. I want baseball, damn it! It's like, you know, every time I look at the animes like this, it's just in these endings, it's like, you know, there's a reason why Major League is like the premier baseball media example. Like, it's everybody's favorite because the way they ended that movie, Wild Thing coming up, something to save the day, just like, yeah, it's the triumph. And it's like, God help me. It's just, oh, the ending, it's what made watching this series so hard, and actually kind of why it took me so long to finally record this episode, because it was like, I'm getting to the end, I know what happens, because I remember from way back watching it, like, I don't want to watch it, I don't want to watch her lose again, and maybe that shows you how good it is. Like, that's, I think, the flip side of it, is, like, it is very much like, you know, having tape, you know, because, you know, back in my day, in particular with hockey, you know, if my team made the playoffs and particularly got to the finals, I would tape the games. So, like, I remember, like, I taped the New York Rangers' entire Stanley Cup Finals run, and, like, I remember loving to watch Game 7, but absolutely hating to watch Game 1, which, for those who don't know, Game 1 of the 1994 Stanley Cup Finals, they went into overtime, and I think it was like a power play or whatever, and Brian Leetch had a shot, and he hit the crossbar, and it went out, and I think it came to Pavel Bure, who went on a breakaway and scored on Mike Richter, and the Canucks won Game 1. And it was like, it's such a heartbreaking loss. And you add the fact that at that time there was the whole idea of the curse of 1940. Gerard Delatar knows what I'm talking about. and it's like, oh no, here it comes back again. And it's like, and I guess maybe that's an example of sort of the sports aspect of this anime working so well. Is like, you honestly feel sick to your stomach and horrible because they lost and you wanted to see them win. And it's like, oh no. But at the same time, yeah, I want to see them win, but it's not so much that they didn't win. It's who beat them. And it wasn't the boys' team. It was Takatsuki. And you just want to punch that guy in the face. And maybe that's a sign that the show worked. Maybe that's exactly what it's supposed to do. All I know is that I didn't like the ending. I felt it made it a victim of genre. I felt it brought far too much melodrama into those final episodes. And I felt it worked against the overall plot and themes that the entire series was working with. And that was a lot quicker way to say everything that I've probably just spent the past 10 minutes rambling on about. yeah. And like I said, they needed more. I want more of this series. And I guess that is a great way to sort of end it on in a way, is that the overall feeling is that I want more of this. I want more of these girls and them playing baseball. I want to watch them beat the boys again and again. I want to see them face more teams. I want to see more games. I just want more of this. And if anything, that's the biggest crime of all, is that I want more. And I guess, you know, again, you always leave them wanting more. Well, they've left me wanting more. And this is a really good series. As I said, for all those who talk and act as if we haven't tackled gender issues and gender roles and all this, here is a series that is a perfect example, in particular in Japanese anime, of tackling society's norms and the ideas of gender roles and who can do what and who can play where. Whether girls can play baseball, whether girls can do anything that men can do. Those issues that we talk about wanting entertainment to tackle today, well, it's been done. And here's it talking about it. And doing it in a much better way than the over-the-head, pound-you-with-a-sledgehammer way that we do it in today's series. And it does it in a way that, more importantly, whereas today's series are very exclusive to those who maybe don't agree or whatever, it's just like, it doesn't feel like it's for everyone. this series feels like it includes everyone. Everybody can watch the series and fall in love with something. Everybody can watch the series and fall in love with an individual character or a couple of characters, if not the entire team. Because they allow you the chance to get to know these girls. So you're not saying like, oh, these are girls. No, these are people just like you. They have immense talent and you want to see them succeed, and to hell with what society thinks that just because they're girls that they shouldn't be allowed to play. You want to see them play. You want to see them prove these rich asses who are holding them back wrong. You want to see them win Koshien. And if nothing else, it's what the series does right, is it makes you care. It makes you care about these characters. It's funny. It's entertaining. The music's wonderful. The animation's great. And the story all the way up till the end is just outstanding. I can't suggest Princess Nine enough. And I give Princess Nine a 4.5 out of 5. I definitely suggest checking it out. Again, like I said, you can find it on YouTube right now. Under Nozomi Entertainment. Under their Lucky Penny label. You can find the entire series, both subbed and dubbed, on YouTube. Just search for Nozomi Entertainment and go into their videos until you find, or search into their playlist until you find Princess Nine. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I enjoyed this. And this is really fun, you know. This is a really fun way to do these. Like, I felt really engaged this episode. Which is, it's a lot more, I think, I can said for other episodes. I think it also helps that this series was something I really wanted to cover for a long time. And, so, yeah, it's just, I think I did well with this. Please, let me know in the comments. Let me know on Facebook, wherever you find the show, what you thought of this format. I'm really interested about what people think of this new format. So, please let me know in the comments below. And remember to check out all the other content here on the Absolution Network. That includes my other shows, my wrestling shows, CMG's Wrestling Reviews. I have other shows, Tom's Top 10, which I'm going to look to get into. It was something I was going to do with other people, but technological restraints are probably going to change that, and that's probably going to be something, another thing I'll do by my own self. And I hope to have other sort of relaunches, not relaunches, but the re-releases of Tokyo SOS, XCast, and other shows out soon. So all that and more. Of course, Shin Tiger Kuro, his content, which he puts on the Absolution Network. That and more. Check out everything on the Absolution Network here at www.an.132productions.com. And next time out, well, next couple episodes, you know, I have a lot of stuff. I'm going to stay away from any month, and I'm just going to go through stuff that I've sort of been wanting to review. So, I have some superhero movies, a couple Teen Titans stuff, particular Teen Titans versus the Justice League, Teen Titans, the Judas Contract. Very interested into reviewing. I've gotten my hands on the first seasons of Duckwing Duck. The complete series of SWAT Cats, the first season of Super Friends, the first season of Real Adventures of Johnny Quest, and I just look forward to, in the future, reviewing those shows, among others. So, Tom's Prerogative is back, and the future really looks golden for some really, really fun reviews. So, until next time, my Toonami Generation...
find cover. It's gonna get too dangerous.
Stay gold.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.